Blog Talk Radio.
Bank roll, mom. Okay. But you know, a lobby. From California, love on the west side. Thank God for the weed women in the sunshine. Dumb high, I'm sunset. Blowing cushion from the one time you get a contact. Catch your ass at the red light. Wanna run at them sideways in a Hellcat. On some red flat. By the way, I never seen a better view, not in Malibu. Bunch of bad bitches naked in the swimming pool. Hit a wave, crash your player's phase in the living room. Crack, sound like a doggy style. Corrupt, got a nigga with a gas at. Moonrock, got me acting like I never had shit. From bank kid to a Hollywood address. Same nigga though, 101, get your head kicked. Respect you more than the tat, bitch. Air hood, air set, though. Front time for the wet coat. LA to Bay to Sacramento, out to San Diego, California.
I'm your host, Chris Stevens. Hopefully you're having a fantastic week so far. If this is your first time tuning in, All Subjects Everything is an internet interactive radio show. When we are live on the air, you can call in with a question or comment at 661-554-9194. You can also check us out in the Blog Talk Real Network chat room, as a few of my esteemed listeners like to do from time to time. Or if you happen to follow along via the Twitter machine, just use the All Subjects Everything hashtag. And remember, if you can't listen to us live or available on iTunes, you can go to the iTunes store, search for All Subjects Everything under podcast, download the shows for free. While you're there on the show page, rate us from 1 star to 5 stars. Write a little review. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to hear and see in future shows, and we will do our very best to accommodate you. And for your smartphone and tablet users, All Subjects Everything is available on the Stitcher mobile app. You can download Stitcher to your smartphone. Search for All Subjects Everything there. Take us with you in the car, the gym, the office, wherever you want to get in on the conversation. And don't forget our Facebook page, facebook.com/AllSubjectsEverything. There you will find past show links, news and updates of what we're working on, and we're turning it into a forum. We'll have poll questions, we'll have topics, ask questions, yes, and then you guys can talk amongst yourselves, discuss the topics. We'll join in from time to time, and that'll help us develop a better show. Okay, so earlier this week, the NFL finally, you know, got what they wanted, what they've been trying to get since the very day the Los Angeles Rams became the St. Louis Rams in 1995. And that is a return to the City of Angels. And the last team to leave L.A. will be the first to return. Rams owner Stan Kroenke has this grandiose vision of building a stadium in the Inglewood section of L.A. where two teams can inhabit it. And the NFL went for the plan. The NFL went for the Inglewood plan. The Carson plan, you know, seemed a little, you know, more tailored towards the Raiders, but for some strange reason, the Rams and the Chargers get first dibs on Kroenke's Inglewood property. So the Rams will move to L.A. immediately. While that facility is being built, there's discussions of them either playing at the Rose Bowl or even the L.A. Coliseum, where they once played from 1951 to 1965. So, here's the thing about the NFL returning to Los Angeles. A couple of things. A couple of moving parts, if you will. That was one of my my last full-time journalism job. My editor at the time used to say in meetings all the time, there's a lot of moving parts to this. So that has become a part of my conversation, whether I wanted to or not. But yes, there are a lot of moving parts to this whole, you know, NFL comes back to L.A. thing. Number one, have you heard anybody really, you know, excited and gung-ho about the NFL returning to L.A.? I haven't. I know Raider fans. Shout out to my man Joe Schmuck on Twitter. The Raiders fans have been begging for the Raiders to return to L.A. And I'm a historian. You know, I prefer the Raiders to be in Oakland, where, you know, they made their name. But they were most famous as the L.A. Raiders. I feel like the Raiders deserve to California because they are California. Can't say that about the Rams. I don't want to say the Rams ever had, you know, second billing, but by the time the Raiders moved to the Coliseum in 1982, that's exactly what it was. Well, nobody checking for the Rams because, number one, they weren't as good as the Raiders, and, number two, they don't have the, you know, the aura, you know, the brand, the legend that the Raiders do. So, long story short, I really don't think too many people give a damn about the Rams coming back. If it had been the Raiders, it probably would have been a bigger story and should be. But like I said, if any one of the three teams that were vying for, you know, Los Angeles deserved to be in Los Angeles and stay in California long term, it's the Raiders. It's easily the Raiders. Rams, meanwhile, they just exist. I mean, outside of that, you know, great, that period of the greatest show on turf when they won a Super Bowl, went to another, they really haven't been much to talk about at all. I mean, you had the fearsome foursome, you know, with Deacon Jones, Merlin Olsen, and those guys. And, you know, they did make one Super Bowl in the late 70s, early 80s, losing to the Steelers. But the Rams were just kind of there for the most part. The Raiders are the Raiders. I mean, there's Al Davis, Just Win Baby. There's the Silver and Black. There's Marcus Allen, Howie Long, Bo Jackson, Lyle Alzado, God rest his soul. You know, those folks. The Raiders are L.A. The Raiders are California. And I feel like they should have got first dibs because they're the franchise that would anchor the market. Because I'm venturing a guess here. I don't have an official number. But I'm just going to go with a 3-to-1 ratio at minimum of Raider fans to Ram fans in Los Angeles. In fact, I can confidently move that to 5-to-1. So where do the Raiders go from here? The NFL is offering $100 million in new stadium costs towards a new stadium if the Raiders are to stay in Oakland. And that's hopefully where I would like them to stay, because Oakland's losing, you know, a bunch. I mean, the A's, they're looking for a new ballpark outside the city. The Warriors are moving to San Francisco in about 3 years. So what does the East Bay have, man? You tell me. And at one point in time, Oakland was a bigger sports market than L.A. was because they had the better teams. There was a point in the league's history, although very brief, in the NBA's history, where the Warriors were better than the Lakers. There was a time when the A's were better than the Dodgers and the Angels, and that period lasted a lot longer than anyone will give the Oakland A's credit for. And the Raiders, of course, were always better than the Rams. Always. In fact, that's probably why Al Davis moved to L.A. in the first place some 34 years ago. He knew the Rams weren't about anything in that area. He knew he stood to make more money if he could get the Raiders to L.A., and that's pretty much what happened. And they moved away in 1994 simply because the Coliseum had just didn't serve the purpose for him anymore. Fast forward to 2016, his son Mark has taken over as, you know, managing general partner in the wake of Mr. Davis's passing some years back, and he's talking about taking the team to San Antonio. No, don't do that. Don't do that. Please don't do that. The San Antonio Raiders doesn't make any sense. I mean, you got two football teams in Texas already. You already got the Cowboys. You got the Houston Texans. One's always going to be good. One's going to mildly get, you know, cared about. But the San Antonio Raiders, that just doesn't seem right. The Raiders belong in California. The Raiders belong in L.A. And this is where Goodell dropped the ball, because he gave the second option to the San Diego Chargers of moving into Stan Kroenke Stadium along with the Rams. And the Chargers, meanwhile, have been trying to, you know, bully the city of San Diego, you know, for years about a new stadium, and to their credit, they haven't budged. I mean, it pretty much went to pot when the San Diego Padres got a brand new ballpark, Petco. Probably one of the more beautiful stadiums in Major League Baseball. So after that, the Chargers were so open about, you know, being done with San Diego and wanting to move to L.A. So they have a year to get it done. They have a year to get it done by this, you know, this league mandate because, according to the L.A. Times, if the Chargers do not exercise their right to move to Inglewood by January 15, 2017, the Raiders will have a one-year option to join the Rams. So they have 367 days. Because remember, this year is a leap year. They got 367 days from today. So this could potentially be the Chargers' last season in San Diego 2016, or, you know, they just, you know, go ahead and, you know, join the Raiders, join the Rams in L.A. And they started out as the L.A. Chargers, but they were only in L.A. for 2 years before moving to San Diego. Actually, 1 year. They moved to San Diego in 1962. And I was ranked because the AFL started in 1960. And they were the L.A. Chargers in 1960 and 1961, moved to San Diego in 1962. And that's where they've been ever since, until this whole L.A. business started picking up. But the thing I wanted to get to really, really quickly before, you know, I move on to the next subject. Actually, you know what? I can probably take a little bit more time on this. Because it's interesting to note that whenever these NFL teams, whenever these pro sports teams actually move into these new arenas and stadiums and stuff, it's usually in a neighborhood that is either urban, working class, or just flat out poor. And that is a sinister part of the evil known as gentrification. If you're not familiar with gentrification, it is the matter of fact. Let me Google the definition really, really quickly. Thank you, Wikipedia. Okay, gentrification is a trend in urban neighborhoods which results in increased property values and the displacing of lower-income families and small businesses. This is a common, widespread, controversial topic in urban planning. It refers to shifts in the urban community lifestyle, an increasing share of wealthier residents in our businesses, and increasing property values. Gentrification is typically a result of an increased interest in a certain environment. Early gentrifiers may belong to low-income artists or bohemian communities, which increases the attractiveness and a flair of a certain quarter. So, yeah. Basically, what gentrification is, you know, the long way home is pushing out poor people of color and allowing, you know, young urban professionals of Caucasian descent to sweep on in. And the same goes for the Raiders, you know, I mean, for the Rams moving to, you know, the black section of Inglewood, which has been explained to me by more than a few folks. And you can see it with the Nets moving to Brooklyn in the Barclays Center, which was a, you know, once a very, you know, black part of Brooklyn. So, while everybody's so crazy about these new stadiums and these moves and things of that and these new structures and all of that, try not to forget that people are being pushed out for this stuff. And for what? In another 20 years for, you know, the owners and people to say, well, this stadium isn't doing it for us anymore, so we're going to have to move again unless you guys want to kick down some more money. And that's not cool. Especially not cool in the case of St. Louis, when they still, the city of St. Louis, not Stan Kroenke, not the St. Louis Rams franchise, not the National Football League, but the city of St. Louis still owes $72 million on the dome. You heard me, $72 million. $72 million. And that's not exactly hard to come by. I mean, easy to come by, pardon me. It's very hard to come by. I mean, it's not easy to come by, I should say. So how in the world do you, you know, with a clear conscience, with a clear conscience, say that I'm just going to move this, you know, team, you know, without even kicking down a little something to the city of St. Louis, which you've held hostage for, I don't know, a good 10 years now, and, you know, with this move, and now they are stuck paying for an empty stadium. Because how do you fill a Edward Jones Dome when there's no tenant? You don't have an NBA team. No way in hell the St. Louis Blues are giving up, you know, their stadium situation to play hockey games in a dome. That didn't work out too well at first for the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, when they were waiting for their arena to be built. Because they lost money hand over fist trying to fill out a 43,000-seat stadium for hockey. So the Blues look, so don't even ask the Blues about anything about the Edward Jones Dome. Just don't do it. Because you're going to get laughed at. You're absolutely going to get laughed at. But that's pretty much, you know, what this is to me. Like, it just, I mean, it just smacks of, you know, owners, you know, professional sports owners being like these cheap, you know, greedy, slimy, you know, business people who want to shake down cities, struggling cities, mind you. Because St. Louis doesn't have it. Oakland doesn't have it. San Diego doesn't have it. And these owners knew that. Dean Spanos knew it. Mark Davis, even though he seems to be a little bit more willing to stay in Oakland, knew it. And Stan Kroenke, who might be the most greediest, slimiest, sneakiest, shadiest son of a gun of them all, knew it about St. Louis. So, it's just something, you know, to consider when you start talking about, you know, moving franchises and urban planning and all, and stadium planning and all of that. Just remember that, you know, this disproportionately affects black folk. And Latinos and Asians and Native Americans and Eastern Indians. It affects them, but it mostly will benefit white people with money. Just something to think about. Just something to think about when you guys, you know, when people start talking about, you know, moving franchises and things, that this is, you know, good for the community. It's good for so-and-so. Like, just think a little clearer. Think about people who are going to have to find places to live. Think about people who've been living in certain places for centuries and years, and now they're forced out, you know, don't know where to go, don't know if they can afford to move anywhere, and all for a pro sports stadium that in 20 years max will have outlived its usefulness. Just something to think about. That's all I pretty much ask is that, you know, people start thinking a little more clearly about, you know, these professional sports team owners, you know, shaking down, you know, sports teams and whatnot. Shaking down cities for stadiums and arenas that they can pay for with money or with their own money, or can cut deals with fellow business owners in different areas to, you know, pay the cost. And I get that Kroenke's stadium is going to be fully funded, like LA is not going to spend any money on it. I get that. But this is a one-off, you know, situation. This is definitely, you know, the exception, not the rule. Because that's the first thing that comes up, you know, when an owner feels like, you know, his team needs a brand new shiny building. Oh, we're just going to move it. We're going to move somewhere where somebody will give it to us. And that's whack. That's very whack. Especially when, you know, fans, you know, really, you know, attach themselves to teams and players and have memories, because that's what pro sports does. That's what sports is supposed to do in general. It's supposed to take away, you know, the stress and, you know, struggle of everyday life, where you can just go to a game for a couple hours a day or night and enjoy yourself. And you're going to take that away from people because you're greedy. But, you know, these type of folks don't feel no shame, so it's really just me, you know, talking to a brick wall. But I know, you know, the rest of the folks who listen to this program probably feel a little differently. They probably agree with me. Even if you don't, I understand. But if you do, you know what I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So, yeah, it stinks. I mean, we'll see long term if the NFL returning to LA, more importantly, more specifically the Rams returning to LA, actually has the investment, makes a return on the investment that the NFL all of a sudden thinks it will. But I don't think it will. Moving on to our second and last subject of the day, Elle Magazine, freelancer Linda Chavers, she really started something yesterday. Elle dropped a piece on their magazine's website talk called "I Have a Problem with Hashtag Black Girl Magic." Okay, so I'm going to read the first couple paragraphs for you, and then I'm going to give you a reason why this is absolutely foolish. Ready? Here we go. Essence Magazine just released its February issue celebrating the Black Girl Magic Clash of 2016. I first noticed the popular term Black Girl Magic as a hashtag on Facebook, Twitter, attached to posts by girlfriends celebrating themselves, their loved ones, their babies, their lives. I've seen it on T-shirts, spread out on the tummies of little smiling black girls showing all of their teeth. These are statements and images of pride and blackness and girlhood created and celebrated by black women and girls, and that's a positive thing. But something just doesn't smell right. This is where it gets stupid. Maybe it's just me. As someone who has lived with the chronic incurable disease, MS, multiple sclerosis, for almost 10 years, I know that illness and disability can make a person feel like a failure. No matter what doctors, friends, or family members say, no matter what scientific establishment says, she can carry around a sense that she did something wrong. She might think that if she just done something different, something better, something magical, that maybe things would not be as they are. In the past 10 years of my illness, I've developed coping skills, I've learned breathing techniques, I've made sure to feel grateful for lightness and laughter. But one attitude I'll never take on is the idea that I can be a magical black woman. Somewhere within me is some black girl magic, because there isn't. Everything inside and outside of me is flesh and bone and a nervous system with bad signals. Nothing magical. Okay. So you get the general gist in those three or four paragraphs, you know, that this piece just goes, you know, off the rails. She goes on to say that the strong black woman archetype is the reason for black girl magic, and that it's foolish, and that it, you know, suggests that black girls are something other than human. And she herself says it sounds nitpicky. Then why write it? Why write something that's foolish? Why? And for a white magazine at that. I mean, you definitely can't see Ebony or Essence or Jet, you know, or Vibe magazine printing this foolishness. Like, you know, I couldn't see, you know, going to a black publication and saying, hey, here's why I think black girl magic is dumb as a black woman. They would look at you like you stupid. It doesn't matter because the rest of us are looking at you like you stupid anyway. To me, and this is from a male perspective, I don't have the experience of being a woman. I have the experience of wanting to get as close to women as humanly possible, but that's another story for another time. But I don't have experience as a woman. But what I see with black women is they have double jeopardy against them just by the identification alone. It's one thing to be black in this country. I walk around with it every day. I've been a black man for 34 years, going on 35. This ain't no walk in the park, folks. But to be a black woman in this country, in the United States of America, where white women are constantly upheld to a different standard and a pedestal and are thought of to be, you know, everything pure, light, perfection and all of this, and then black women are thought of as, you know, thots and whores and, you know, prostitutes and you know, bad attitude, net rolling and all of that, and some of the stuff that, you know, they're being stereotyped as is being portrayed by their own men. Like, we say some stupid stuff about black women. We as black men, I'm talking about. So I made the tweet yesterday. Shout out to my man Will DeSheriffosky, who got me halfway in trouble with ESPN's Carrie Champion on Twitter yesterday. About I said black women, celebrate yourselves at all costs. Do what you do. Love yourself. Hopefully the rest of us will come around. Because that's pretty much what black girl magic is to me. It's just black women and black girls celebrating themselves because no one else seems to bother. And it's frustrating to them. I understand that. We all could do better in that. So the foolishness of this article really just kind of drives home the point that, you know, black girl magic is a thing and should always be a thing. Because black women deserve to feel good about themselves in all forms. You know, the doctors, the lawyers, the professors, the teachers, the students, the hairdressers, you know, the sex workers, you know, the stay-at-home moms, the grandmoms, you know, taking care of the kids. You know, black women do some incredible stuff, man. I could be here more than 30 minutes. In fact, I'm almost at a show, and it makes me mad because I really could talk about this for another 15 to 20. But the bottom line is, this piece is problematic in itself. I have a problem with this woman having a problem with black girl magic because, okay, she has MS. I get it. Being sick and afflicted with anything will make you feel like crap. Depression makes me feel like garbage every single day of my life. Every single day of my life. But I'm not going to take away from someone else's shine, you know, just to, you know, woe is me in print. Like, if your life is going great, if you're a dude who gets women, I admire you. I want to be you. But what I'm not going to do is sit here and say, well, you shouldn't feel that way because I feel like garbage. I'm going to try to do something to get myself up to your level. And that's what Linda Chambers pretty much should do. Instead of trying to take down black girl magic, find that black girl magic because it's within her. Whether she chooses to believe it or not, it's in her. Being a black woman in general is magical to the women, to some of us men who actually have some common sense. It's there. It's absolutely there. It's absolutely there. So it's just, the piece is just silly because it just pretty much is her going, you know, her telling, you know, this white publication and this white readership that black girl magic really, you know, doesn't matter, kind of like, you know, the outrage about black girls rock and whatnot. And to come from a black woman, it's got to be equally frustrating for the women who, you know, who are proponents of black girl magic. But to them, I say keep doing you. Keep being brave, keep being bold, keep being smart, keep being beautiful, keep being awesome, keep being you. And hopefully one day the rest of us will catch up. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to All Subjects Everything today. Greatly appreciate your time. Tomorrow, we will break down the divisional round of the NFL playoffs, and maybe I'll continue this whole black girl magic thing if I have time. If you missed us live, blogtalkradio.com/Chris Stevens on air. iTunes, All Subjects Everything, same thing for Stitcher Mobile. Enjoy your Thursday. Until we talk tomorrow, y'all be good or be good at it.